This is episode 279 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and I'm joined by my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, man. Good to join you here on this just regular Wednesday.
Just a completely regular Wednesday. There's no particular holiday. I don't even know if there's anything special going on in the world right now.
About what?
I mean, what do we get on here and talk about anyway?
Well, I mean, we can talk about Seahawks football because the state of the Seahawks, what an interesting place to be.
I thought that's what we were here right for. Now. I thought we were here to talk about the Seahawks.
The most important thing going on this Wednesday, yes.
Of course, we're here to talk about Marshawn Lynch. And the thing is, though, nobody is in the Seahawks facility on Wednesday because it's a holiday. So we're left with having to watch some press conferences on Tuesday. But we can talk about the excitement of Marshawn Lynch coming back. I don't suppose we need to talk too much about the last Sunday's game because it's over. It's done with. And it was about as bad as the Rams game that we kind of blew off a couple weeks ago.
Sure, and I don't know that we blew that game off, but they certainly did, or at least were ambushed by it and came out a little flat. But yeah, I think that there's some things to talk about regarding the matchups with the Cardinals and some overarching themes that I think that we can look at as to where the state of the franchise is in this moment in time. And I do think it is a very interesting place to be as a Seahawks fan right now in the sense of we're tied for the division lead, have a chance at the number one seed in our house this Sunday. Marshawn Lynch is back on the roster. Beast mode is in the house and it's all right there. They can clinch the number one seed possibly, or at least a bye. And it's all right there. And yet after these last 3 weeks and the way the cookie has kind of crumbled here as a fan with all of those positives, all those things that are amazing right now that you should be excited about, there's plenty to feel just despair over. And it's such an odd place to be as a fan right now. And I'm having a hard time, and I don't know if you are, balancing that out to be sure that I have the proper perspective on things right now. Because I see people all over the map.
It's a weird spot to be in because the Seahawks have clinched a playoff spot. No matter what happens coming up against the 49ers on Sunday, the Seahawks are going to play in a playoff game. We don't know where it's going to be until after this upcoming Sunday, but we know we're going to have it. So we know we have 2 weeks of football left at this point, and it is exciting. Yeah. And part of the cool thing about these next 2 weeks is we're going to see Marshawn Lynch on the football field. I don't know how much we're going to see in the 49ers game, but we are going to see it in the playoffs. And we had an email come in. I know Monday evening, there was kind of a lot of people refreshing their Twitter feed because one of the things about Sunday was that you see Chris Carson go down to injury, and then not too long after you see CJ Procise go down to injury, and Travis Homer comes in, and yeah, he breaks off a nice 17-yard run, but you see him getting tackled in the backfield, and he's just not the breakaway guy that Chris Carson can be to shake off tacklers, much like the criticism that we give Rashad Penny, right?
Right.
And Rashad Penny goes down to injury a few weeks back. So I felt like as a collective group of Seahawks fans, we're going, what are they going to do? Because sure, are they going to get what's his name? Xavier Turner off of the practice squad. Mm-hmm. Is it Xavier? I don't know.
Some dude.
Some dude.
It doesn't matter.
Some dude off the practice squad. Or go out there and, there's a lot of talk about CJ Anderson, who played well for the Rams in the postseason last year and then came in at the beginning of this season for the Lions, didn't do anything. You're talking about guys that are just kind of on the fringes. Mm-hmm. And so Seahawks fans collectively were saying, well, what about Marshawn Lynch? It turns out maybe the Seahawks were thinking that a while ago. I got an email here from Mike in Walla Walla says, "Hi, Adam and Brandon. It's Monday evening, and I've just heard the news that Marshawn may rejoin the Hawks. I just wanted to express my extreme excitement before ultimately hearing Adam try to temper everyone's excitement with things as arbitrary as facts and logic. Love the show." It's meh. Go Hawks from Mike.
That was hilarious, man. I love it. Obviously, Mike has been listening for more than a minute to the show. That's awesome, man.
That's a good callback on Mike's part.
Yeah, very much so. I appreciate that a ton. It's interesting because I didn't know where we were going to go with the show right out of the gate. And clearly, you want to talk about Marshawn. And that's where we want to go.
I feel like this is the lead story. This is the lead story of the week.
It's the lead story of the moment. But right. I wanted to get back to what happened Sunday, where the team is in terms of, you know, chances going forward and things like that. But I guess we'll start here and I'll try not to temper this too much. All right. But a couple things to do the opposite of tempering here and patting down everybody's expectations. Look back to last season with the Raiders. If Marshawn had played in 16 games that year, he was on pace for over 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only by 8 yards, but he was on pace for a 1,000-yard season. That was just last year before he got hurt. And he was also one of the top 5 backs in yards after contact on a crap Raiders team. Like, it's a guy who does have stuff in the tank. And I do think that if you bring him in at this juncture in the season and his body is in a good place, he can really give you a burst for 2 to 3 weeks. I think he has that in him. And it's unbelievably exciting. He might be the most beloved Seahawk of this iteration of the Seahawks. And it's exciting. And the cool part about it is this game of football, the difference between the Cardinals and whoever you think is the best team in the league right now, let's say it's the Ravens, okay?
Yeah.
It's not as much as you think. It's maybe a difference of about 5 All-Pro players and then an emotional boost. Look at the teams that are really connected, the teams that come out fired up. How often do we talk about games? You go, how in the world did that happen? And yet, the only thing you can pin it on is one team was more ready to go. They had something to be excited about. They're playing for each other. There was heart in it. And that's what Marshawn brings. And that is a boost that we desperately needed now when you look at that Cardinals game and it looked like they slept walked through it. Which isn't a fair criticism either. And when we get to the Cardinals game, I'll loop back to that. But this could be a huge moment for this organization this season. He is the man that could do it. And let us not forget about Robert Turbin in the mix here, too. We have the band back together again. This is cool.
The band back together. And yeah.
Yeah. He's the younger of the two backs. He has way less mileage on his tires. Like, Turbo could come in and really do some things. I just think it's an exciting thing. And it obviously something we should all be fired up about.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about the age of these players, because people act as though we're bringing in like Franco Harris at the tail end of his career when he came to play for the Seahawks, or bringing back Sean Alexander all over again. Marshawn Lynch is not that far removed from an NFL season, and he's 33 years old. He's still not even the oldest running back in the league. Frank Gore is still playing at 36 years old. Adrian Peterson's playing at 34 years old. So Marshawn Lynch, he's up there with those guys. And those are, you know, Hall of Fame type talented players. And I think Marshawn hangs with those types of guys. And Robert Turbin, yeah, 30. He came out of the same draft as Russell Wilson.
Right. I mean, they're not grandfathers. But with that said, when it comes to the running back position, they might as well be the Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady's of running backs.
Sure. Yeah.
Very like some of the greatest of their era. Also at the tail end of their career.
Comparing Marshawn and Peterson and Gore to that group of quarterbacks. Yeah. I'd say that's absolutely fair.
So does it come with its, you know, limitations? You betcha. But if we were looking at this season, let's say this was the preseason going into this year, and all the running backs go down, and our solution is to bring in Marshawn for a season?
Right.
No, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But to have him here to just focus and give, this is his last hurrah. I think we all know that, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's playing anymore after however far we go in the playoffs. I really do believe this is it for him. Because he's got so much other stuff going on. He's got a great life. I mean, he doesn't need it.
Oh, and Oakland is moving away to Las Vegas. He's not going to go join the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't think he would have come back to the NFL if not for the opportunity in Oakland. That was the only opportunity that I think he would have taken and come back to and said yes.
Except for Seattle.
Apart from a late season run in Seattle. And it would have to be a late season run. And one of the curious things to me about this deal with Marshawn, you know, he was in the facility a couple weeks ago. The Seahawks had to report it. They played it off like it wasn't that big of a deal. But it kind of lines up with the Rashad Penny injury. And seeing some of the interviews with Marshawn, it almost makes it sound as though he was thinking about it as an opportunity to come play it in a kind of a reserve role along with Chris Carson to kind of be that secondary guy. That's the impression that I got.
God, I wish.
That's the impression that I got from hearing some of his talks that he's posted.
Sure. And I wish that would have happened so much. I mean, it really is a bummer to see Chris Carson go down with a fractured hip.
Yeah.
Of all things. That's not good. I mean, that makes me worry about him going forward as well, and especially for a guy who hasn't gotten paid yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a real bummer for him. Not to mention the organization, but it would have been amazing to watch those two guys work in tandem. I mean, there wouldn't have been a team in the league that wanted to tackle the Seattle running game.
Right.
But I think, you know, we focus a lot on this running back situation, and I mean, look at the offensive line right now. I mean, you talked about Homer getting, you know, smashed in that Cardinals game. I mean, Joy Hunt has a fibula problem. You know, when you have a fibula problem, that usually means it's not one piece anymore. That doesn't sound good.
No.
I mean, Upati's been hurt for, you know, a while now and doesn't look like himself. And now Dwayne Brown's gone for, look, let's just be real, the year. I know they're doing this whole, well, he might come back. Da, da, da. And even if he does, what can he be, 60%? Guys, especially at that age, you don't come back like sooner than the timetable. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's 34. He's the oldest guy on the team.
Right. So when I look at that, you know, the offensive line is in shambles. And it started with the Justin Britt injury. And there's no equivalent to Marshawn Lynch riding in from, you know, from the sunset and like taking us back to the playoffs and like fixing the offensive line. Like, Walter Jones isn't suiting up anytime soon.
No.
Okay. So in a way, bringing in Marshawn, like, as much as it feels amazing, and it does, oh my God, it does, I don't know what he's going to look like against an offensive line that is going to be made up of Jamarco Jones and George Fant.
It does take me back to, you brought up Marshawn Lynch's stats for that 2018 Oakland Raiders team. And that was a pretty busted up offensive line for the mm-hmm. Oakland Raiders. So, right. I mean, I remember when we played against him at that London game. I mean, they couldn't protect Derek Carr for anything. And so it does kind of give me a little bit of hope that at least Marshawn can make dudes miss and run over guys and get a few yards. I'm not as confident with Travis Homer or anybody else that they could put back there. I am worried about this offensive line, though. I'm not just worried about it going into the postseason. I'm worried about it moving forward because, you know, as nice as it was to have that veteran presence of Dwayne Brown and Mike Upati on the left side of the line, we're seeing why you don't necessarily want to build an offensive line out of dudes in their mid to late 30s, because injuries can take their toll. And come the end of a season, that's a pretty tough position to play and stay healthy all season.
Sure. I don't think it was a bad play by the Seahawks at all to bring in those veteran guys. And because who are you going to get that's better? You know, some guy coming out of college has only played in the spread and doesn't know what to do.
And I'm not saying injuries are inevitable. I'm just saying that this is kind of the worst case scenario, and it makes a more likely scenario when you have older players.
Sure. There definitely is truth to that, no doubt about it. And, you know, as I look at what's happened over the last 3 weeks with the team, whether it be suspension or injury, I mean, they've been decimated on almost all levels of this football team. And you lose 7 key players over the course of 3 weeks, and the team's going to look a lot different than the one that went into San Francisco and went toe to toe and beat them in overtime. Like, those are going to be two very different teams that you see now. And it really illuminated to me how injury luck plays so heavily into whether or not teams go far in the playoffs. I think it is the biggest contributing factor in all of football that is outside of your control.
Yeah.
I truly do. I mean, look at the Rams last year. Stayed relatively healthy. And, you know, also were able to employ the refs to get them to the Super Bowl. But, I mean, it takes that kind of health, right? I mean, the Patriots seemingly have good health for the most part throughout the season. I mean, they never end up losing 5, 6, 7 key starters at any given time. You know, maybe 2 or 3 somehow. I don't know how they manage to do that, but they do. And so I look at what's happened to the team over the last few weeks, and it's like, I see people calling out Pete Carroll. I see people, just wringing their hands about how the game has passed him by and how maybe he's a terrible coach and that maybe we need fresh blood at 11-4 tie, you know, with an ability or with the opportunity to take the division crown this Sunday.
Yeah.
And people are freaking out. Come on now.
Well, that you do have to admit there's a certain segment of the fan base that, you know, maybe they started watching about the time Pete Carroll took over as head coach. So they don't know necessarily what it was like. Well, even if you started watching this team when Mike Holmgren took over as coach, mm-hmm. you are used to having a winning football team going back to the beginning of the Mike Holmgren era. There was the two sure. down years where Holmgren won, what, four games, and then Jim Mora Jr. came in and won five games the following year.
Yeah, I very much remember those depressing years. Thank you.
Yeah, because those were the two worst years in the last 20.
Right. No, the expectation is high. I mean, since 2002, when we've entered the division, if we win the division on Sunday, we'll have won it nine times. The other three stinky teams in our division will have combined for nine division titles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you a little bit about the dominance. But, you know, to get back to Pete a little bit and people saying, well, the game's passed him by. Well, here's something you need to realize about Pete Carroll's coaching philosophy. And it's something that we rode all the way to two Super Bowls. And that was he believed and playing a relatively simplistic scheme, and they were just going to out-execute you. They didn't give a crap if you knew what they were doing. They were going to be faster, bigger, stronger, better execution, smarter, and since you simplify everything down, you can play quicker. That's always been the way that Pete's coached since he's been here.
Right.
And what you have for that to work is all your dudes. He needs all that talent to make that work. You start stripping things away, and then at that point, you're screwed. And that's what you're seeing here. You can say the game has passed him by, and maybe your position on that would be, hey, you need to learn how to deal with injuries better and be able to adjust. It's never been a style. Right now, they are slow to adjust in games. They never adjust. Like, it's maddening to watch Christian McCaffrey catch screen after screen after screen, and nothing is done, right? Like 2 weeks ago, that was unbelievable. Watching Brett Hundley run around. You know, they just keep contained. Somebody keep contained. No adjustments. And that is something that is an MO of this team, but it's also gotten you to 11-4.
Right.
And this is where we are now, in one of the most successful eras of Seahawks football ever. So be careful if you want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, is all I'm getting at.
By bringing in new blood, you may bring in a guy like Matt LaFleur, who's, yeah, he's doing things well with Aaron Rodgers and has that team out to 12 wins at this point and a potential shot at the first round bye. And, you know, that might be a unique case. We'll see over a couple of years. Look at Sean McVay, what's happened with him.
There you go.
I mean, everybody wanted a guy exactly like Sean McVay. And where are the Rams this year? They're in third place in the NFC West and out of the playoffs. Yeah, well, that's great. For a guy who is so innovative, he couldn't innovate his way to even second place in the division coming off of the Super Bowl. And yet, Pete Carroll, you know, coming off one of the worst Super Bowl losses ever, still had his team back in the playoffs.
Right. And your worst season since Russell Wilson has become quarterback has been a winning season.
You're 9-7, right.
So, yeah, be careful what you wish for. And you're right. The Sean McVay, I think, is an excellent example. A couple years of scorching success as the league tried to adapt to his little, you know, window dressing offense. And then once they did, now he's in Screwedville. Like, he is screwed in LA. He's chained to Jared Goff and Todd Gurley. No first round draft picks. Like, they are totally catfish. And so is Sean McVay.
And that might be a point to where you say, you can point at the general manager in those situations too, right?
Well, do you think Sean McVay didn't go to bat for Jared Goff?
Oh, I'm sure he did.
This is my guy.
Yeah.
So with that said, appreciate the long-term sustainable success that Pete has brought to this organization. That is a rare commodity. That is a very rare commodity.
Just because the Patriots have done it for years and years and years, the Seahawks are the next best at being able to produce that kind of long-term success. And even that is rare when you look mm-hmm. over the history of the NFL.
Oh, it very much is so. And you point right to it. So the Patriots, I think everybody would point to as the model franchise in that manner of sustained success. And yes, the number two franchise that everybody points at is the Seattle Seahawks.
So if the Seahawks can go out in this offseason and find the next Bill Belichick, then okay. Then sure. Then maybe I'll be okay.
Yeah, I'm not ready to throw Pete out yet. I mean, give me a break. Now, if you want to give me Ken Norton's name as somebody I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Okay. But then again, I look over these last 3 weeks and he's missing half his defense.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And again, that depends on who you can get. You know, Brian Schneider, special teams coach. Maybe that's right. Time to move on from.
Right.
And it's easy to want guys fired, especially after a game like that against Arizona, where, you know, you talk about emotion. The one thing that was striking to me, I talked to Ed Smith, who is one of the dudes that hosts a radio show on the weekends down in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how for Arizona Cardinals fans in particular, and I don't know if this bleeds over to Cardinals players as well, but Arizona Cardinals seem to have it in their mind that the Seahawks are like their chief rival. And sure. maybe that's the case for them. I don't feel that way about Arizona. It's not mutual. But if
it's cute. but I do think there's truth in that. I mean, they don't seem to get as up for San Francisco or the catfishing Rams.
No.
It is us for whatever reason. So that's neat. Like,
and it's led them to, what, 5 of 7 wins in CenturyLink over the last 7 seasons, which is crazy.
I know. I told you I had a bad feeling about that game, man.
I did. I had a bad feeling about it, too. But I didn't think that Cliff Kingsbury was the same kind of coach that Bruce Arians was, that they'd be able to get up for it, as well as some of those Arians coach teams. But, you know, before we start pointing the blame at Seahawks players, Seahawks coaches in that Arizona game, as fans, we got to point the finger at ourselves. And sure. Roe comes in with taking the blame for this Seahawks loss to the Cardinals. Roe says, so I 100% take the blame for the Seahawks loss against the Cardinals. The reason being, I went to the game without my spouse, Jeremy. I got invited at the last minute to go with a coworker who gets free tickets from a season ticket holder that can't go at times. Very good seats, just right above the entrance at the northeast corner of the stadium. I couldn't say no. So I went. I left Jeremy at home, who is recently recovering from surgery last Friday, to go to the Clink for the first time this year to see the Seahawks. Normally, all the previous games when we were able to go to the Clink, Jeremy was with me. When the game was a bit of a wreck after the first quarter, I still had a blast. I saw an old high school teacher, enjoyed being around the 12s. But I think because I ditched my recovering husband while a minor surgery, I still left him home, is the reason why the Seahawks lost. Because I was a tiny bit selfish and broke the tradition of going to a Seahawks game without him, the Seahawks ended up losing. I'm so sorry I did this. I fully take the blame. On top of the punishment of a game, my friend and I also got into a car accident heading to the highway in Seattle. A train hit the car that was too far out and to the left of us. It got hit by the train and hit us. No worries. No one was harmed. Just damage to the vehicles. Everyone was okay. But I think it was karma teaching me a lesson to never go to the Clink without Jeremy. And Ro goes on to say why the Rams loss was on her too, but she says, this is karma. I don't believe in coincidence. This is divine providence of Seahawks karma telling me I need to stop doing things to cause the Seahawks to lose. So it's on me, everyone. I'm truly sorry. I'm trying to figure out how to bring the good Seahawks karma back. I'll look forward to listening to this Cardinals podcast review to hopefully shed some positive thoughts in the shadow of the curse that is playing the Cardinals. I hope you guys have the merriest of Christmases and happiest of New Year's and all the holidays. Go Hawks from Roe.
Yeah, likewise, Roe. But you're right. That's bad Hawkra.
That's really bad.
That's really bad Hawkra right there. And I'm glad that she got that off her chest. I think that felt cleansing. And I think going forward, she'll be able to know that she can't leave Jeremy behind. And she's going to do everything right. And from here on out, I believe her Hawkra is now realigned.
Yeah, well, I think when you get that off your chest, that does. That helps to cleanse the Hawkra.
No, for sure. There's no doubt about it. But that was a tough loss. I mean, I could say it was my fault. I mean, I was unable to convince our buddy Jared to hang out that afternoon and go to the game. Not that we would have made it anyways, because the job turned out to be a total nightmare on Sunday. And I didn't get done to a point to where when I was driving through Seattle, like it was mid fourth quarter, and I did yell at the Clink, do better as I drove by.
Yeah, but at that point.
Didn't seem to help at that point because Brett Hundley was still running around. Brett Catfish Hundley.
Well, I know it wasn't my fault because I was beer free at this game.
No, you didn't have a pregame beer?
No, I didn't. Had a postgame one, though.
Yeah, a few.
Brett
Catfish
Hundley. I was frustrated, especially because of the fourth quarter and the fact that Brett
Catfish
Hundley drove the Cardinals on a touchdown scoring drive and Russell Wilson couldn't do it.
And really, kind of looking at that game a little bit, Drake ran around like, you know, he was a man possessed. And honestly, I think not having Al Woods is a big difference in stopping the run.
I think I expected that to be the case.
Yeah.
Not having,
yeah.
When you didn't have Al Woods and Jadeveon Clowney, there's two of your top five run defenders for the season.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a big deal. And then you look at, you know, Quandre not being back there. He's been the total difference maker in that secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention with Shaq being out. I mean, geez Louise, there's holes on every level of the defense, like massive ones. Kendricks is still, I don't think, 100% right.
No. And he didn't play the whole game.
No, and he didn't play the whole game. And Cody Barton's just not ready. Like, if I have to yell at the screen one more time, set the edge, Cody. Set the edge. It's getting to a Fetty-like proportions for me.
Ooh.
Set the edge.
That's all you gotta do.
That's your job.
Well, you know, another guy who had a tough job in this game was Jamarco Jones filling in for Dwayne Brown. And the decision, you know, I'm curious because they made the decision to go with Jones. He kind of, he was the number two guy in preseason behind Dwayne Brown. But a big part of that was because George Fant was hurt in the preseason. He wasn't mm-hmm. filling in behind Dwayne Brown. So
yeah,
I thought, well, okay, with Jamarco Jones playing, maybe they'll use Fant more as that sixth offensive lineman like they have done all year. And then he played like 12 snaps.
Well, when you start getting down, you start throwing the ball more.
Yeah, but you got to protect your quarterback too.
Well, you shouldn't have to roll out six offensive linemen to protect your quarterback.
When Jamarco Jones can't do anything to slow down Chandler Jones.
Yeah, that was some Jones on Jones abuse.
It was
right there in that game. Yeah. Yeah, that it was an odd decision. I mean, I keep hearing about how athletic George Fant is. I've seen him fill in at left tackle. Was it this year that he filled in for Dwayne for a game?
Yeah, for a few snaps, maybe.
For a few snaps or a quarter or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, held his own.
Yeah.
And looked good. I don't quite get it.
I do wonder, was Jones also playing on the right side and filling in because Fluke went out about the same time, too? So, you know, that they have had some issues with injuries on the offensive line, and I can't remember exactly how they rotated dudes around, but
sure.
Even still, I don't think Fant would have done all that much better against Chandler Jones in that type of situation. I think they're probably about the same dude. It's
yeah,
just,
maybe.
why not play both of them and give you, or, you know, roll out Russell a little bit more, get him out of the pocket.
Brock Heward had an interesting comment regarding that, and he doesn't believe that Russell's right.
I think there might be some truth to it. The way Russell was kind of holding his arm at one point in the game, it just looked like unnatural, like he was, you know, hurting in some way.
Yeah, he just hasn't moved the way that he did earlier in the year. I don't know. It's kind of weird to see, and I haven't put my finger on it yet, and I can't really, you know, venture a guess here, but yeah, it's just tough to watch the offense be so disjointed, and then heck, what is going on with Lockett and Metcalf? Like, get some separation.
Yeah.
Get open against these guys.
What it felt like to me, and they were playing the number 32 ranked defense, which makes it even more frustrating. I felt like Russell was dropping back and looking for kill shots. Like the and he didn't have the time to look for kill shots.
Yeah.
So why not dink and dunk a little bit?
It is maddening to be the one team in the NFC West that doesn't run the holy crap out of screens.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there, Jared and I were watching Niners Rams. Every other play was a screen and neither team could stop it.
Right.
And we can't stop it. We can't stop the screen. Can we run some screens, please? And I understand that's not Russell's strong suit.
No. And it doesn't even have to be a screen. It can be like that one play where you saw, Chris Carson get skinny, get through the line, and then he was the only guy open underneath and ended up rumbling for like 20 yards.
And that works as well. But yeah, a little bit of delayed releases maybe by the tight ends, like they feign blocking
right
for a little while longer and then release to the backside of the, you know, the predominant direction of the play. Mm-hmm. Like, where'd that go? Like, that's gone now. I mean, that's a great play. It works in the NFL all the time. And we can't run it. And we can't run screens. And then all your running backs get hurt. And your offensive line is beat up from center to all the way to left tackle. And Schottenheimer's dialing up 50-yard bombs.
Right.
Like, I don't understand. Like, there's been a few times throughout the season and throughout Russell's career, but it's been very sparse when they get to that quick release passing game. You know, short little routes, little curls, little slants, all that. I don't know. It's like they have an aversion to it.
Well, while you're talking about running backs getting beat up, CJ Procise, congrats on getting to, 26 carries on the season now, 23. It was the second most of his career. I know that.
That was 22 carries more than I would have guessed he would have lasted.
He hit 30 in his rookie season in 2016 for rushing carries, 11 in 2017, 1 in 2018, and then back up to 23. This was a bounce back season for CJ Procise.
So he hurt his arm?
He had a broken arm from that hit on by Buda Baker, apparently.
Oh, that broke his arm. Okay, I didn't know what the arm injury was. So
yeah, he got bonked pretty good on that particular hit.
Well, that sucks, man. I don't like to see anybody get hurt, but it's especially frustrating when you see Chris Carson leave the field.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I guess we got
Yep. And then there he goes.
And then we got a guy who's not fast and not particularly powerful.
At least he tries.
Travis Homer. He's got great effort. He's got great effort. But wouldn't you rather have Bo Scarborough right now?
Sure. Yeah. Mike Davis. I'd rather have him.
Yeah. Yeah. I would rather have Beast Mode over all those guys. So I guess I shouldn't be complaining.
I suppose the logic there is that when you have CJ Procise as the guy who's your number three, why not keep a guy like Bo Scarborough or Mike Davis or one of those other guys that you cut and is doing relatively well elsewhere?
It's tough to watch his team just unravel physically over the last 3 weeks. And I guess I keep saying the last 3 weeks because that Rams game was ugly. That Panthers game was a joke.
Offensively, it was fine.
Almost.
They scored 30.
Sure. But as a team, that the Panthers are god awful. And to barely squeak one out against them, frustrating. And then to come out against a Cardinals team, which has appeared to be more confident and competent going down the stretch here, and just get mauled and pushed around. I mean, this is a team that is not trending well. I don't have a lot of confidence there.
The only thing I can think is going back to that emotion, the emotion that they had going into this that we couldn't match.
Yeah. This is a Hail Mary bringing in Marshawn to try to, you know, bring that emotion back. And I wonder how that conversation went with Russ.
Apparently he was in on the deal.
Okay. I mean, he had to struggle so hard the last couple of years to get this to be his team.
Sure.
And everybody like looked at Marshawn as the guy. And now that we're struggling towards the end of the year and you can't seem to lead us over the hump, we're going to bring Marshawn back. I wonder how that felt.
I think in the moment right now, he probably doesn't care. But if the Seahawks do manage to put a string of wins together, if they are able to beat the 49ers, win the division, have at least one home game, and go deep into the postseason, I think it is going to put a little bit of a mark on Russell's legacy to say, hey, he couldn't get it done when Marshawn left, and then they were able to go on a run when they had Marshawn. I mean, he's just going to have to overcome it again later on, because this will be Marshawn's last few games for sure.
Yeah, so this is how I see the next 2 weeks unfolding. 49ers come in. We put up a fight, but lose by 14.
14?
Yeah.
Okay.
The defense is still injury riddled.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole set, your two best secondary players will not play.
How many points are you expecting the 49ers to put up? Because, you know, their defense is banged up too.
21. I'm expecting them to put up 21 points.
That's it?
That's it.
And you don't think that the Seahawks can put up more than 21 points?
Against that defensive line with this offensive line? Oh, hell no.
Have you looked at the points that they've allowed teams to put up over the last 4 weeks?
Yeah.
This is not the same San Francisco team that looking at.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. They just played the worst defense in the whole catfish league and couldn't do jack.
Catfish!
And you're telling me against this Niners defense, they're gonna light them up? I don't think so. You lose this game, you end up being a 5 seed, you play whatever
catfish
show comes out of the NFC East. You win that game. Marshawn empties the tank in the divisional round. Maybe not empties it, but really opens it up full throttle in the divisional round. We win that game. We go to the NFC Championship, and Beast has an iconic game to take us to the Super Bowl, and then all bets are off. That's how I see the rest of this season unfolding. And only because there is hope that the defense will get healthy as we go down the stretch.
Yeah.
That Clowney will be able to play. Anza will be able to play, that Shaq and Q can play. Like, you start getting all those guys back, and you can have some semblance of the defense that we saw just a few weeks ago. But the offense, like, we can't sit here and act like they're going to bail us out going down the stretch when half of the offensive line is gone or in the infirmary. It's just not going to happen.
I just look at this San Francisco defense, and yes, there is concern about the defensive line. Bose is playing out of his mind this year. And
do you think Jamarco Jones is going to handle Bosa after Chandler freaking Jones just lit him up?
Well, I hope that the Seahawks have an answer to give Jamarco a little bit of help.
Well, you think they might have employed that, say, I don't know, by the third quarter or so?
Okay, but now they've had a whole week to prepare.
Well, good God, how long does it take?
They're not good at in-game adjustments, but can they make an adjustment for an entire week after they've had a chance to look at film and go, ooh, Jamarco didn't play very well against Chandler Jones. What should we do?
Well, the one thing that does give me some hope is that I watched the Rams-Niners game, and Jared Goff had a lot of success when he got outside of the pocket.
He did.
And that is where Russell shines. And so they need to move the hell out of the pocket almost every other play. Now, you also saw the 49ers kind of clamp down on that later. And Jared Goff start making Jared Goff mistakes. Right. But Russ won't do that. That's not who he is. So, yeah, they're going to have to do a lot of that. And, defensively speaking, the Seahawks are really going to have to protect the perimeter. And that's where we've been getting gashed all year. It's where the Niners do their most damage, is run into the perimeter. And then also those little quick screens and stuff to Debo. I mean, who is a very talented runner when has the ball in his hand. He reminds me a lot of Golden Tate.
Sure.
Like with his kind of running back-ish sort of style.
I wanted Debo Samuel in the draft. I liked what he had coming out of college.
Cool. I'm happy with Metcalf, too. Like, that worked out. Yeah.
You know what? How about take both of them? How about you take Debo Samuel with the first pick and then take Metcalf, leave LJ Collier off, and then you can draft a dude instead of, say, Gary Jennings in the fourth round.
Well, I don't want to get on the Gary Jennings topic here real quick, but I mean, I'm not ready to write off LJ Collier at this point either.
No.
I mean, let me see what happens next year with him. I still don't think that was a waste of a draft pick to this point. We'll find out.
I mean, you know who's not a waste of a draft pick after a few years? Rasheem Green.
And it's taken him 3 years to round into form.
Yeah.
I mean, it took a few years for Jaren Reed to round into form.
It took a few years for Frank Clark to round into form.
Exactly. So it's not like you just come into the league and you're gangbusters unless you're Von Miller or your last name's Bosa.
And you aren't drafting either of those dudes outside the top 10, top 15.
Right. So you'd have to lose a butt ton of games to get one of those guys.
I do not like that plan.
Yeah, I'm not in. I don't enjoy that. So, yeah, they do a good job with what they've been able to do here. And then also, too, I mean, they've done an amazing job of finding that veteran defensive tackle to come in and be in the run clogger. Unfortunately, Al Woods gets popped for PEDs. We haven't even talked about Josh Gordon yet.
Yeah. Well, just that whole 5-day stretch that it's been, you know, Josh Gordon gets suspended indefinitely. Al Woods, 4 games for PEDs. Carson out for the season. CJ Prosai out after 20 plus carries.
Dwayne Brown
out for the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the defensive injuries that were already in place.
Clowney's probably going to have surgery.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's going to have to do that, which is fine. I mean, he seems to be able to play through it, and you know, that'll be great. I mean, you saw the Seahawks game plan with him over the last few weeks. It was, well, we're going to rest him against these crappier teams and hope we can pull it out. And then we'll have him ready to go against 49ers, and hopefully he'll be our savior. The only problem is you can't rely on a guy to have his best game of the season against the Niners twice.
You can hope. You can hope real hard.
That this game is a lot of hope.
You hope Shaquille Griffin comes back. You hope all the linebackers can play well.
It does not sound like Shaq's going to be back. It does not sound like Quandre is going to be back.
The thing that surprised me, though, too, was not seeing Blair back there at safety. Lano Hill getting the majority of the snaps.
Yeah, I have a hard time figuring that one out, too, to be honest. I mean, what have we seen from Lano Hill over his career? What have the coaches, what have they seen that they feel like, well, yeah, we'll trot him out there.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Blair makes a couple good thumps now and then.
Yeah, Lano Hill out there for 100% of the snaps.
Look, if the Hawks have any chance at all in this game, they got to get after Jimmy. He is so freaking bad under pressure and gets rattled so easily. Like, if you can do that, you probably could get two picks and, you know, maybe you can Band-Aid something together on offense.
I have more confidence that Russ can put up 30 against the San Francisco defense after they've given up an average of 31 points over the last 4 weeks.
Dude, it ain't happening, man.
I don't think they're going to get pressure on Jimmy.
Do you understand how football works? Like, look at the Rams right now. This is a prime example. This is a prime example of how the NFL fixates on the skill position players and overlook linemen. Like, look at the way the Rams were thought of coming into this season with all of their offensive weapons, right? And Goff and Gurley and Cooks and, you know, the Cooper Kupp and, like, all the guys, right? And nobody talked about, oh, you lost three of your, you know, five best linemen and good luck with that. And it imploded their season. Like, I don't care who you have back there. I don't care if you have Tom Brady, who's been somehow genetically spliced together with Joe Montana and John Elway and Dan Marino as one quarterback in the backfield. And if your offensive line stinks, you're screwed.
So you think that it's more likely that they're going to get pressure on Jimmy with four guys because they're not going to be blitzing a whole lot with George Kittle in the game this time for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
And I don't see, I mean, unless Jaron Reed all of a sudden shows his last year's form and comes out and has a huge game up the middle. And I guess they do have some injuries in the middle of that 49ers offense. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I can consistently count on pressure from Jaron Reed, especially if he's the only guy you have to worry about. I mean, Rasheem Green, I suppose, is leading the team in sacks now. But
well, Clowney's going to play.
Okay.
Did we feel super confident about that going into the last Niners game? That was probably the game the pass rush looked the best. And we've been saying you got to have Clowney and Anza out there at the exact same time. Otherwise, it doesn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get Keem out there with them. Yes, I think they do have the personnel to actually get pressure on this 49ers offensive line and defeat some of those guards. Like, and the tackles didn't look good in that game either. Like, that seems far more likely to me than the ghost of Mike Upati, Jamarco Jones, and Joey Hunt with a bad fibula taking on five first-round draft picks on the defensive line. That feels much more unlikely to me, yes.
So let's see. Who will be right in this? Either I'm right and the Seahawks score 30, or you're right and they score 14?
Something like that.
But they don't score.
Well, okay, how about 14 offensive points? And maybe they get a pick six or a fumble recovery, that sort of thing, a defensive score, and the defense sets them up for another short field goal somewhere in there. That's the way I see the path to victory on the offense.
Mm.
Is, you know, get a couple scores if you can, defense scores once, and they set you up in great field position to score, you know, one more time. You have that. That means your defense has played well against Jimmy G, and you hope for the best. Oh, and guess what? Cover George Kittle no matter what. Let everybody else beat you.
I have to think, though, other teams, they have that situation in mind when they go into a game. Don't let George Kittle beat you. And yet, George Kittle beats everybody.
Yeah, it's a gigantic mystery to me. He's not, I mean, he's fast, but he's not like, I don't know. I mean, he's not a burner.
And he's not
he's
Gronk.
He's big, but he's not Gronk. He, you know, did I tell this the Woo story, the Woo guy story on the last pod?
Yes.
About George Kittle?
Yeah.
Yes. He's a Woo guy. Woo. That's George Kittle. Somehow he is wooing his way to an amazing season at tight end.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it. I can't stand him either. He drives me crazy.
He's becoming probably my least favorite 49ers player.
Oh, by far, easy, and it's not even close. Jimmy G's a second, but like, yeah.
Really? He doesn't bother me at all.
Oh my God, he is so phony. People talk about Russell Wilson as being phony, and he's not. He's just a genuine cheeseball, uh-huh. Which is great. Like, I can embrace that. As long as that's you, man, I get it. That's fine. Jimmy G is such a faker. He is such a faker.
But those eyes, though.
God.
He is bad under pressure, though. Looking at his pressure numbers this season. Yikes.
Yeah, he's awful.
He's barely completed half of his passes, and I guess he's averaging 7 yards per pass. That's not bad for being under pressure.
Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I don't know how many picks he's averaging under pressure, but I know that's not good.
No, he has, well, his TD to INT ratio is 1-to-1 when he's under pressure. Five picks,
he's only
five
thrown
touchdowns.
One pick while under pressure?
No. Who I said 1-to-1 ratio.
Oh, okay.
Five picks, five touchdowns.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
See, the Seahawks are going to have to do something outside of their DNA in this game. They're going to have to play up on the receivers, bring an extra safety down to deal with Kittle, and they're going to have to blitz, and they're going to have to be vulnerable to the big play. Like, instead of this shell coverage, let everything happen in front of you, get diced up going down the field, and give up, you know, lose the time of possession game by 79 minutes, even though that's more minutes there are in a football game. You know, like, they're going to have to do that. They're going to have to get aggressive. Like, Ken Norton's going to have to put on his big boy pants and go punch somebody in the mouth. Like, let's go. Like, I'm so tired of this soft crap.
So you really don't think Shaquille's going to play?
It doesn't sound like it, man.
They're back at practice, though.
Nobody practiced today.
No, I mean, on Tuesday.
It's baby Jesus' birthday today.
I know.
Okay.
I think Shaquille plays in this game.
I hope so. Good God, I hope so.
And then you put King on Kittle and a linebacker.
And you roll safety help that way.
Right.
You just do.
I know there was that one play in the Cardinals game where I think people were bagging on Ugo Amadi for because he gave up on his dude. I forget which one of the Cardinals receivers it was. It was a third, fourth string dude.
Yeah.
And he came off his guy to double cover Larry Fitzgerald on like a 3rd-and-2.
Right.
And everybody's saying, oh, well, Ugo busted coverage. Well, no, he was going to cover the dude that was most likely to get the ball.
Right. And so, you're going to get got sometimes that way.
And they did. And that, you know what? And I was fine with that third down conversion. I'm like, you know, because I would rather chance it on that dude not even catching it.
Right.
Even though he's open versus Larry freaking Fitzgerald.
Yes. Every time.
Who's lined up right at the sticks.
Without question, man. And so, yeah, you got to get on Kittle. You got to be able to set the edge and keep that perimeter run game in check and hope for the best. Like, that's really all you can do.
49ers have a solid run game, too.
Yeah, I know.
Between Mostert and Breida, Tevin Coleman.
And for the love of God, watch out for the screenplay.
Yeah, they're probably going to run a few of those.
If it feels too easy that you're getting to Jimmy, back up.
Saw that a few times against the Cardinals.
I don't know, man. It's just going to be tough. But I just said a lot of negative crap. I know that.
Well, I want to go back to the positive thing you said because, you know, I had it in my notes here. I was going to ask you as a potential trip to the Super Bowl on the line with this game because having a home game mm-hmm. in the first round of the playoffs, I would say is better than going on the road. But you laid it out for us that you think that this road warrior team is going on the road and knocking teams down because it's just going to build and build with this after a potential win against one of the NFC East teams.
Well, that's the thing. So say you lose against the Niners, you go and you play, you know, whichever craptastic NFC East team you play, and you get that confidence back in that game. You start feeling yourself a little bit, and these guys have played awesome on the road. I mean, they've really played better there than at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing that I hope for is a first round bye. I would prefer the bye over anything.
And you need a Packers loss to the Lions to help make that happen.
Yeah, I haven't even looked into the permutations yet, but it's not going to be easy. But yeah, they're going to have to win 3 games to get to the Super Bowl. And the thing about it is, like I said earlier, I mean, the defense does have a chance to get healthy going down the stretch here. And they do have a fighting chance. We do have Russell Wilson. It can happen. It's a bit of a long shot, though.
Sure. And my thinking was, you get a win, and even if you have to start out playing in, if you don't get the first round bye,
yeah,
you're playing the Minnesota Vikings. They've looked terrible in that home game against the Packers.
And it was a big game, and Cousins crumbled, huh?
Yeah, on Monday night. He's 0-for on Monday night in his career still.
Yeah, how many of that happened as a Viking, though? It's only like 3 games, right?
Oh, sure. I'm just saying, no other
quarterback. He was on a terrible Redskins team there for a while. But
yeah. When you're the only quarterback in NFL history that hasn't won on Monday night playing as many games as you have.
Sure.
You know,
it's a bad look.
It's a bad look.
Yeah. It's a bad look. Yeah.
Part of it could be coincidental. I don't know. Part of it could be playing up for the Skins as many years as he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would not be sad about playing the Vikings at home in the first round. And then you have to go on the road in the second round. But if the 49ers are the fifth seed, you can pretty much count that they're going to give.
Yeah, we're getting way into the ifs here. Okay.
Hey, I let you take the Seahawks all the way to the Super Bowl early. You can allow me for a minute to go through, you know, other options. Okay.
All right. Fire up the playoff generator on ESPN. I know this is your favorite game. So go ahead. Sorry.
No, this is really easy. All I'm saying is that, yes, the Seahawks would have to go on the road, take on either the Packers or the Saints, however it shakes out. The 49ers will have to go on the road, take on the Packers or Saints. If the Seahawks can win in the divisional round and the 49ers win in the divisional round, you're talking about the NFC Championship back in the clink.
That'd be fun.
And I feel like that's more likely, having two home games out of the three versus going on three road games against pretty good teams.
Yeah, you make a solid argument. I know one thing. I'm going to be rooting my ass off on Sunday. Yeah. I want to beat the Niners so bad this weekend. And I do believe Beast is going to give us some sort of boost. And really, we're going to need you 12s. Like, this is a big game for you too. If you're going to the clink, you need to bring it. The defense needs your help. Like, if we're going to get off, you know, on those snap counts and get to Jimmy G really quickly, we need that extra crowd noise. We need to rattle Jimmy G. We need you guys. Like, you're going to have to play a big game too.
And I expect the 12s to bring it, with it being, you know, this could be Marshawn's last game at CenturyLink.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about it in those terms. Sure.
So one last hurrah for Marshawn out the door.
He's come back to empty the tank for us. The least we can do is the same.
And with that, let's get to the second half of the show. Getting into the second half of the show, want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. We're kind of goofing off at the beginning of the show, and I didn't want to, you know, get right out there right away because, you know, Adam, he gets a little bit...
I just hate Christmas, so whatever.
Right, yeah. So I didn't want to start off the show with getting into why or how Adam hates Christmas. And I don't want to get into it now either, so I just wanted to...
I could give you a 15-second synopsis. Try sitting in a mall for 10 years for a month and a half every Christmas season and watch little, you know, crappy kids go and cry on Santa's lap and have parents yell at you while listening to Mariah Carey for, you know, a month and a half about all she wants.
It can drive a
Christmas
person crazy. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you hate it, like, on the inside.
See, folks, I saved you from having to hear that at the start of the show, but I do want to wish everybody a happy holiday season and an upcoming Happy New Year.
Yeah. See, New Year's I'm on board for.
It's a good holiday.
That's a great holiday. Thanksgiving, great holiday. Christmas, piss poor holiday.
You know, personally, after having some kids that couldn't sleep through the entire night because they're so excited, you know, it's not my favorite night of sleeping either.
I can't imagine it is. No, very much no. I didn't have to deal with any of that.
And so here I am podcasting, no nap. You're welcome, people.
Yeah, my daughter legit told me not to get her anything.
Well, you know what? You know, she does have college coming up. So I think your child has something called perspective.
Yes, and a trip to Austria this summer to go play her bassoon there, you know. So, yeah, daddy's got to grind a lot of wheels.
She knows that her Christmas present is in coming in other forms.
Yes, it is.
I did watch Gremlins, though, with my kids for Christmas.
Like the original Gremlins?
Yeah.
Oh, killer. Yeah.
Yeah, good movie. Good Christmas movie.
Sure.
It's like the horror, you know, family horror movie version of Die Hard. You know, it takes place around Christmas, mm-hmm. although not your traditional Christmas movie.
So I'm ashamed to admit this, but in the hotel room while we were killing time this week, my buddy Alec and I ended up watching Matthew McConaughey star in The Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. Okay. I'd never seen it.
I didn't even know it was a movie.
It's a rom-com. It's got Jennifer Garner, right?
Okay. Which,
that was nice. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And it honestly wasn't a terrible movie. But I wondered if that was a Christmas movie, because it's all based on whatever holiday movie that is where with Ebenezer Scrooge.
Christmas goes back Carol. With the guests.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, it's that same formula, right? You got past girlfriend ghost.
Oh.
Present girlfriend ghost.
Maybe it is a Christmas movie.
I would argue if Die Hard's a Christmas movie, then that is a Christmas movie. It's the rom-com of Christmas movies.
I might have to check it out. I think you've sold me on this.
It's not amazing. It's a solid B-.
Yeah.
And Michael Douglas is in it, and his character's kind of fun.
Oh, I like Michael Douglas.
But I'm definitely on team Die Hard as a Christmas movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Actually, the my favorite Christmas movie that we watched this holiday season was Noel, which is on the Disney Plus.
I don't know anything about Noel.
It has Anna Kendrick in it, and it has Bill Hader.
Oh, okay. This is a newer movie then.
Brand new movie. And it didn't come to theaters. It just went straight to the new Disney streaming.
Oh, it sounds like a real banger then. Couldn't even make the theater.
I think it was, I think maybe it was a way to tease their service though. Cause it was a pretty good movie. Yeah, it was, Santa Passes On and Bill Hader and Anna Kendrick mm-hmm. are his two kids. And, Bill Hader is not a very good Santa replacement.
He goes
off to Phoenix. So screw him.
Oh, or yeah.
The Cardinals.
Yeah, what a terrible place to go.
I know.
Like if you're going to blow off Santa duty, last place I'm going is freaking Phoenix. I can think of 1,000 other places better. You know, like, I don't know, downtown Baghdad. like anywhere where there's chaos, that would still be better than Phoenix.
I don't know about that, but I haven't been to Phoenix.
It feels right. That feels right to me.
Why don't we welcome some new members of the flock?
Cool, because I know we just lost a few, so let's offset here.
Jason Kellogg comes in at $5, says, "Hi guys, it's Jason from Miami. I'd like to dedicate my little Flocker membership to Beast Mode. Whatever happens on Sunday, it's just great to know that the Beast is willing to put it on the line for the team and us fans. Keep up the great work." From Jason.
Dude, I'm so with Jason on this. I really, really, really hope to hear Rabel on a big Marshawn run. You know, bust out the Beast is alive and well. Like I'm looking for that. It gave me shivers just thinking about it, dude.
I know. I need to figure out a way to stream the audio, I think, for this game in particular.
Yeah.
Jesse Aney is back in, and now he's covering for a $36 donation for 2016.
Oh.
Says, "Can we go 1 year without losing players against our division opponents? Now going into the playoffs, wondering if this wounded team can put some duct tape on the gash and keep destroying the seasons of other teams."
Hey, man, I'm with you. I'd love to send the Niners packing here from the CenturyLink field. It'd feel right. It'd feel so good.
How crazy is it, though, just when you consider all the hype around the San Francisco 49ers this year, mm-hmm. that they could be the fifth seed and lose the division? And as much mm-hmm. as people have, with all of the criticism on the Seahawks this year, they have the opportunity to be the NFC West champs again.
They sure do. And yeah, let's be real about the Niners. And you tried to bring it up, and I shut you down because I'm a dick. But the Niners haven't played great coming down the stretch here either. It feels like they peaked right about when we played them.
They had a really easy early start to their schedule, though. I mean, reason why people were saying that, going into that game against the Seahawks, that it was their first real test.
Yeah, and they, muddled their way through that difficult stretch of games there and really got lucky against the Saints.
Almost lost to the Rams.
Yup.
Well, it will be an exciting game to watch on Sunday, especially in that prime time slot. And, Pete Carroll doesn't lose a lot of those prime time games.
No, and that's something that should make you feel good. I mean, I don't know. Didn't we just play the Rams in primetime?
We did, but that was a road game. Primetime at home in December. Pete is money.
Sure. Okay. primetime at home in December, west of the Mississippi, when the humidity is above 72% and the temperature is below, you know, 14 degrees, and when Russell Wilson paints his toenails green.
Yeah.
Like, how many qualifiers do we need to put on that?
Enough. And we need to put enough.
All right. Because I'm pretty sure Russell Wilson paints his toenails.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. I'm saying, like, he probably gets, you know, with the kids.
It's
happened to me. My daughter made me paint up, you know.
Did she?
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Have your daughter's never, like, done your hair?
Oh, yeah. I just don't know if I want, I don't know if I like people touching my feet.
Well, I wasn't exactly excited about it, but it happened.
Another new member in the flock, Benjamin Swartout, in at 1212 via PayPal. Seahawkerspodcast.com/support. Click the donate button there and put in for the monthly subscription there. So thanks to Benjamin.
Yeah, heck yeah, Benjamin. Appreciate it a bunch. And obviously coming in at the right number at 1212.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing him in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
All right. So getintheflock.com if you want to become a member of the flock and just cover for all those people that we lost when we were breaking down Christmas movies.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what people came here for.
No, I think that's what the whole first hour of the show was about.
Oh, that's right. This is our half.
Yeah, the second half is our half. I think we've made that clear by now, and we just do our nonsense thing. This is our chance to, like, just, you know, shoot the catfish, you know, right. when we don't get to all that often, you know?
I think that's fair. And you know what? I'm a little bummed that we haven't been able to do our pick'ems through this last half of the season. And I know you're busy, but I would be crushing you. And I haven't been announcing the pick'em winners either. Week 15, yeah. Bow down to Young Choi, one of our longest tenured flockers.
Really?
Perfect week.
Congratulations,
Young. He had a perfect week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And, I know. You know, maybe you got to get a little lucky too, but yeah.
I think I need to come up with a good prize for him. Maybe I do have the Michael Dixon autographed mini helmet.
Ooh, that'd be exciting.
Yeah.
What would the give me one more option and we'll decide right now.
$50 gift card to Fanatics.
Oh yeah, hook him up with that.
The gift card?
Yeah.
Because then he can pick what he wants.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go, Young. Reach out to me if you think that Adam was wrong on that decision.
Yeah, which would probably be right. Because I'm generally wrong.
I also have gifts going out to our, you know, I talk about Young being one of our longest tenured flockers.
Yes.
Each time a year, about this time, I like to send out little gift boxes to people who have contributed at, you know, to some of the highest levels or just, you know, been with us since the beginning.
And like for Young, a long time. Yeah.
And, you know, Flocktimus and.
Oh, geez. Yeah. The list goes on, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got 25 boxes, so I could go down the entire list of 25, but. Yeah, I have 25 of these boxes going out for all our top supporters, and it's a pretty exciting little box here.
That's awesome, man. I did get a sneak peek at some of the contents, and I think you will all be pleased. And it's pretty cool. So if you do see a box show up from Brandon, it's not a bomb. It's good stuff.
And I even put in a little piece of our hometown. I went to Moose's Saloon, which is, you know, the famous... This is whenever you come to Kalispell and you say, hey,
or infamous. Is it infamous or famous?
It's one of the two.
Okay.
I think it's famous.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, but that is the place, though, that if you come here, that's where we suggest to meet up at.
Sure.
It's it's very iconic for Kalispell, Montana.
Yeah. Yeah. In a town that doesn't have much for iconic things. Yes, it is. It is iconic.
Unless we're going to meet up at Glacier Park, but that's a little bit of a hike.
Yeah, which would be sweet too.
But that would be sweet.
Yeah, what do I know?
That would be my number two choice.
Yeah.
Just Moose's is easier.
It is. Shorter drive.
So yeah, there's a something I think fans will enjoy of in there too for Moose's.
All right. Good deal.
Week 16, Kerry and Carson got the win. Maxim.
Oh man, that is a little apropos there. Oh no.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Carrying him right off the field.
Yeah, and the only game he missed was the Seattle game, as we all did.
Yeah.
And he came in with, I think, 14 points because the Jet Steelers pick didn't come through. But all the other games picked correctly. He did not pick a losing game because I do not count the Seahawks game.
No, that's not a loss.
For you just made the right pick.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing you can do there. Yeah. He wasn't strapping on a helmet.
No. And we covered it already. It was Rose's fault.
Right.
Also getting a box.
Yeah. Even though she knows what she did.
I got to bring up her Hawker spirit, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Also wanted to shout out to week 9 winner Pete's Clownies. I can't find that contact info. So email gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com.
Okay. You got some swag coming to you, man.
Yeah. Scott and Chica emails in, says, I think I hate the catfishing Cardinals more than the Rams or 49ers Ooh. Combined. We Ooh. Had injuries from them before our LOB. Now Carson and Procise have season-ending injuries. It also seems like the defense with those backups can't stop anything. Our offense couldn't do anything with a defense that has the lowest rating. What do you think the Seahawks will and can do at this point? Great show. Always looking forward to listening.
Yeah, appreciate that, Scott. You know, we kind of covered that a bit in the first half, but yeah, if I'm going to be 100% realistic, I think they lose to the Niners, win at least one playoff game, but I think more likely two just based on one big beast mode performance. That's what I think.
I think they're going to get it done. I have confidence.
Cool. That's great. It's like, I hope you're right. I'd love to be wrong.
It's like just over 50% confidence, but
whatever, dude.
Slightly.
You see, that's where you screwed up. If you have more confidence than you don't, you can't admit to the slim margin of the confidence. You just got to roll with it. Be like, okay. I'm confident.
I am.
Okay. There we go.
Kind of.
That is the most Brandon expression of confidence I have ever heard in my life. I'm really confident in. Well, sort of.
Should we sports hate the Cardinals more than we do? Should we?
Did it have to matter more?
Yeah.
And they don't, so...
Plus, I like Fitz. Once Fitzgerald leaves.
Yeah, maybe.
Because even as much sports hate as I had for Arians...
Literally, if the Cardinals ever decided to be relevant for more than one season and out of every four, then maybe. But that's all they can muster. So I can't.
It's like the AFC West with the Chargers.
I mean, ask any Broncos fan or any Chiefs fan or any Raiders fan what team they hate the most. The team that will be mentioned the least are the LA Chargers.
And that goes back to fans that have been for since the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Jared and I had this discussion in the car on the drive over to Washington the other day. And I was like, even when we were in the AFC West, like, I still to this day loathe the Broncos and loathe the Raiders. Uh-huh. I'm fine with the Chiefs because they, you know, usually stuck it to the Broncos and that felt good. But I just literally never cared about the Chargers ever.
David Micah Clark comes in from Las Vegas at the Sophist 87 on Twitter. Says, so I am a diehard Seahawks fan, but I'm also a huge craft beer fan. I can stay in Woodinville for the last game of the season and bring great craft beer for the show. Can we just have a blast and record a silly show? Let me know. Thanks.
I'm very bribable with beer, is all I'll say. So,
yeah, do we need to make a trip out to Woodinville for this game?
Where is Woodinville?
It's near Seattle.
Okay. I was going to say it must be near some trees or something.
It's woody.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we were in town, David, we'd totally be on it.
Yeah.
Especially with bribing us with craft beer.
Exactly.
Ooh, speaking of craft beer, since, you know, again, second half of show stuff. Yeah. New Belgium has a new craft beer. It's an ale that they brew in the Knob Creek bourbon barrels.
Oh, so after they take the bourbon out, they steal the barrels and then brew beer in them.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Do you have a bourbon-like taste to it?
A little bit, yeah.
That's interesting.
It works really well.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I'm not a bourbon guy.
That was my Christmas Eve go-to. I'm not a bourbon guy either, but I do like a little bit of the flavor of it.
Interesting. Yeah. The only reason I can't do the bourbon or the whiskey, like, because they're basically the same thing.
They are. Somebody actually explained the difference to me.
Yeah. Once you drink with your pinky out. I don't know.
With bourbon, they can only use the barrel once.
Oh, it's a one-time barrel situation.
Yeah, whiskey you can keep going.
Oh,
with the same barrels, but I guess with the first round through the barrel, you get different flavors.
Yeah,
and that goes, that's what the bourbon is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care how many times that nasty drink has been through a barrel. I can't do it. I mean, when I was 18, me and our buddy Lency grabbed about the quarter inch off the top of every liquor bottle that his parents had in the cabinet, and they were mostly whiskeys. Mixed them all together, and each had like a, you know, a, I don't know, about a 24-ounce water glass full of like random liquors, and drank it all in about like 30 minutes. I don't remember a lot about that night, but to this day, just the smell of whiskey or bourbon makes me want to vomit. And it's sad because I hear it's amazing.
You've told me that story a few times now, and it amazes me every single time that you could go with a glass that huge.
Yeah, it's tough. I know you had heard that story. I just figured maybe the listeners had.
It's been a while since you've told it, but I just... Okay. I don't even know how often it comes up. Probably about the same time every year.
Yeah, probably. So Daddy sticks to beer now when his Seahawks make him drink.
One more email here from the Bard. It says, hi, fellas. Well, that was a bit of a gut-wrencher of a weekend, wasn't it? Just when things are going along fine, the football gods come along and yank the rug from underneath you. I know that it's always the next man up, but what happens when there are no catfish men left, which is what it feels like as I write this. If I'm going to be positive, then we have at least two games left, and we might have some people back by the end, but most of our injuries are bad ones. We have no starting tight end, center, left tackle, or running backs. Wow, that's pretty brutal. I'm also watching the Niners game and seeing Beast Mode and Robert Turbin back. And I must try to be cheerful and positive, so I'll wish everyone out there a very happy Christmas and hope this
catfish
show sorts itself out. Gadzooks! Jazavison, the Bard Clowney. Oh no, he's out too.
I love John, man. He just kind of like summed up my entire way of thinking about this team right now.
I know.
Right there.
He covered it all in like one paragraph. That's why he's the Bard.
Yeah. What, an hour and 20 minutes here? We're still trying to figure out how to say it?
He summed it up for us.
Yeah. Well, he's smarter than both of us combined, too, so that helps.
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. What you got for do better?
My do better is for the freaking NFL schedule makers. Can we play the Cardinals earlier than December in Seattle for once? I'm tired of these December games against the Cardinals. I went and looked at it. The last time that the Cardinals and Seahawks played in September in Seattle, 2011, is before Russell Wilson even got here. Other than that, they've always been toward the end of December. There's been one game in the middle of November. I want this game to be earlier on in the season, not late in the season, because I'm tired of losing late season games to the Arizona Cardinals. So for the schedule makers, do better.
I like it, man. But I do understand why they do it. They do these divisional games going down the stretch for high drama.
I'm fine with playing the Cardinals in December. I want it to be in their house, though.
I see.
For a change. I just want a change.
All right. You know what I want to change with, Brandon? Is with Seahawks Twitter. Or mainly just Seahawks reporters.
Okay.
Because I get on Bleacher Report app, and they've got the first, you know, little bit of the team stream that you look on, and it's all just Twitter crap, right? And which is fine, because a lot of times it's just, you know, up to the minute stuff or whatever. Like, that's where you're looking to be like, did he sign? Did he sign? Did he sign? Did Beast Mode sign? Did he sign yet? I hope Beast Mode signs. I really want Beast Mode to sign. Did he sign? Did he sign? Yeah. So I get that.
Hey, that was about 90% of the people listening to this show right now still.
I know.
That was how they spent Monday evening.
I'm as guilty as the next of doing that very same thing. But this is something that drives me absolutely crazy when it's on Wednesdays. Like when the first injury report comes out. Like obviously all of the newspaper guys, all of the internet dudes, all that, they get the email from the Seahawks with the injury report at the exact same freaking time. And then they all feel the need to post a picture of the injury report. And all you see is the injury report 46 times in a fucking row. Like, I get it. You're not doing any sort of journalism here. It's not like you're reporting something groundbreaking. Turns out everybody else knows too. I think they need to get the catfish together and just decide one of these clowns is going to put out the injury report, because I don't need to scroll through that for 20 freaking minutes just to get to the next actual news item. So to all your reporters who think you're breaking unbelievable news here, do better.
Twitter, at Seahawks PR. Tweet the injury report. Let all the reporters retweet it. Done.
Well, that's the thing, is all the reporters retweet it.
It's fine if it's a retweet, but they're putting it out as their own tweet.
Yeah, and they all have like a little different tweak on it, you know, like Bob Condotta. Seahawks injury report for today. Seattle practiced yesterday, and this is basically what it looked like yesterday. Turner, a new injury worth watching. So, like, he pulled out his one little, you know, nugget of information, and then here's John Boyle. The pound sign Seahawks aren't practicing today, but here's an estimation of participation if they had. Cool. Like, every one of these guys seem to think like they're, you know, have groundbreaking news here.
But we do. I do like looking at the injury report.
Yeah, sure. I don't need to be bombarded with it.
See, Shaquille Griffin, even though they didn't practice, was limited in practice.
Yeah, that's not a full participant either. I would love for him to play. I'm rooting for it, man. It just didn't sound good. That's all I'm getting at.
It is my favorite thing, though, that they put out estimations.
Yeah, this is the estimated injury report.
Even though we didn't practice today, if they did, we think Shaquille Griffin would have been limited and not out.
Good God, Dave Damashek called and he wants his what if game back. All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week, Brandon, is for the dude who trained Marshawn Lynch this last 2 weeks.
Yes.
He is a brave SOB. I will say that. Like, the idea that he got in there, he's like, yeah, so I kind of just beat the hell out of him. And you see, then you see the little video clips, you know, of him, like, you know, touching Marshawn up.
Yeah.
Pop, 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 pop. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, one wrong punch there and you piss him off. And it's the end of your life.
Yeah, like, Marshawn doesn't have gloves on.
No, your life is over. So for taking that risk and getting Marshawn ready to go in 2 weeks, the trainer, who I didn't bother to look up his name, better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, I thought about giving a do better for all the people online who are like, well, that's not very impressive.
Okay, then.
The dude is swinging. Okay, he has gloves on, but he is swinging at Marshawn's sides. Marshawn isn't wearing pads.
No.
And he is like, he's not even, you know, leaning into it. You're leaning away from it.
No, I mean, I get it. If you're a fighter, like if you're an MMA guy or a boxer or something like that, yes, that's probably not super impressive. Right. But, you know, your job is to take major blows.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Like for all of us regular ass dudes out here, like, have you ever been hit with a glove? Like with somebody with a glove, like a good thump to the ribs?
It knocks the wind out of you.
It doesn't feel good.
Even without gloves. I mean, if you've ever taken a shot to the midsection.
Yeah. Oh, it's anything, even worse without gloves.
Yeah.
I remember the time me and my buddy Lindsay decided we were going to box in his basement. And his dad worked for the railroad and had these huge mittens, right? And so we stuffed foam in the mittens. And then, but he's like the missing link and his arms are longer than, you know, both of mine put together. So it didn't go well. But the point is that when you made fists with those mittens, this foam turned hard as a rock. I remember like thinking, I got to get inside here if I'm going to have any sort of chance. Gave him like two quick jabs, got inside, gave him a kidney shot, looked up, pow, right in the side of the head. One eye just went sideways and I hit the deck and I was out cold. It doesn't feel good. That's all I'm getting at.
No. And I bet he didn't feel good about those body shots either.
Oh, I don't know. All I know is he, before I hit the deck and before I was unconscious, he was laughing his ass off. I know that much.
My better at life this week is, of course, the beast himself, Marshawn Lynch, and his 8-second press conference that he had. That we're going to go ahead and just play it in its entirety.
In its entirety, uncut.
Happy holidays. Merry New Year. Y'all have a great day. It's a great feeling to be back. Thank you.
There it is.
Perfect. It's so perfect. How good did he look in the Seahawks colors again with that Seahawks hoodie on? Like, is there anything that feels better than that?
No, and I love the fact that about the day after he signed, he already had his new Seahawks merch up online, unfinished business.
Shout out Jalen Rose, but keep getting them checks. Yeah, man. This isn't a dumb idea for Marshawn at all. Like, this is a good little business opportunity for him.
Oh, that's what makes me feel like this was a couple weeks in the plan. Like,
yeah.
You have the design for those shirts locked and loaded. They might not be printed up just yet, but no. You had them designed and ready to go as soon as this happened.
How long does it take to actually design one of those shirts?
Maybe a week.
A week? Dude, if you can't whip one of those
out, you could
whip
it together in a day, I'm sure. But, you know, like any part of the business, you have to, you have the approval process that it goes through.
What, approval of whom?
Well, Marshawn wasn't drawing them up himself.
Sure. So the graphic designer drew up like seven different ideas and like handed it to Marshawn. I was like, are any of these dope? And he's like, yep, that one. And that's that. This is, you act like the Beast Mode Enterprises or whatever his business is named is like, I don't know, a Fortune 500 company. It's not, there's not like levels of management here. It's whether Beast likes it, Beast don't like it. That's it.
I want to know how many levels of management are between the graphic design guy and Marshawn Lynch himself.
No more than two.
Marshawn Lynch coming back to Seattle. Already got his merch up. Already doing his thing in the press conferences. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, man, that's the best way to end the show. And really, good job, John Snyder and Pete Carroll, knowing how to, you know, spin PR here and bring a Beast back right now. We needed this, man. We needed this bad.
After Sunday, how many of us for about a good 24, well, for a good 12 hours until we started getting the tease that the Marshawn Lynch news might happen?
Mm-hmm.
That was a rough 12 hours.
Yeah, I got to drive across Eastern Washington just stewing on that. And then all of a sudden, what? The Beast is back? And everything felt better. And if there's one thing that I can take out of this, Brandon, is that the Beast makes everything better.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.